If my gifting and my identity were my number one idol and driving force, I knew it needed to become the number one thing I needed to die to.
Friends, welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. It's an invitation to walk together as a global community of like-hearted men consenting to a God-bathed, God-breathed, and God-led masculine initiation. Let's dive deep together.
Father, Jesus, Holy Spirit, thank you for who you are and for what you've done for me, my family, for everyone in this community, for all your sons and daughters, and we're hopeful and expectant for what you will do. And so from a place of gratitude and love, we just consecrate this time. We consecrate this space, our conversation, our words. Let them be for whatever message that you have. And we allow only the voice of God to permeate in this room and in our thoughts. And we silence every other voice but yours in your name, Jesus.
Yes, God.
We just pray your kingdom, your love, your glory, your truth, your faithfulness, your 8,000 promises all over this time and in us and through us.
Yes, God. God, I pray that you would anoint us with your power and your peace, that we would actually experience those two things simultaneously, your power and your peace. I pray that you would allow us to draw from the growing wellspring and vat of our friendship. And God, I pray that you would allow this to be light and easy and the pressure be off, and you would just simply allow stories and ideas and questions to flow. God, come and illuminate our minds and just direct us to what's on your heart. What's on your heart, God? Give us your heart for men out there that are alone, that are on a treadmill, that are in a cubicle, that are in a minivan. Father, give us your heart for that man. Amen.
Amen.
Ryan, last time we were talking, you just had this one-liner that just, it was in passing, but it stopped me in my tracks when you said, if it weren't for God through this message, I wouldn't be in the work that I'm doing. I wouldn't be in the marriage that I'm in. I wouldn't have the kids that I have. Like, all of it is because of God's rescue and invitation into discipleship. That's big. That's like mic drop. Holy crap. Like, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, I guess I just see now God's redemption. He gets all the credit, and he's been there for way longer than I ever realized. You know, before, it was the divorce when I was 5, a lot of confusion, a lot of loneliness, wasn't sports, wasn't working with my hands, wasn't outdoors, it was school and grades and then college and then work. And I banked it all on the career. And, you know, like in America, that's pretty common. And I believe that if I work hard, and I work harder, and I compete, and I win, everything's a meritocracy, and then everything will fall into place. That was my propulsion system. All of my energy, all of my free time went into career.
You know, you've used the term the Michael Jordan of finance. I mean, that was kind of the crown jewel for achievement. That's what you hope to become.
That was the idealized image that Michael Jordan, if he's the best and he wins, no matter what, he can do whatever he wants. I didn't have joy or affirmation or validation in other things, mm-hmm. but it was in school and then it was in work. And so that became the go-to. I never dealt with my stuff, never took the time, never did counseling in your early 20s and you're plowing into the career. Like, you know, I just was never offered the time. And so,
I think it's fair to say it was working for you on one level.
Yeah.
Right. On one level, externally, you're killing it. Right. Yeah. Can we just say that? Like,
yeah.
Externally, you're killing it, climbing the ladder, like above most of your peers. But internally, some things are starting to pop.
Right. Yeah. Above the waterline, two incomes, two great careers, married, college sweetheart. We lived in New York. We came back to Texas. Like, we were crushing it, like on the fast track. I was getting the promotions that I was jockeying for and targeting. So everything looked great, but below the waterline was the pain. And I didn't even know that it was the pain. I just knew it wasn't right. I knew it was loud. Like when I had quiet time, it was very loud in my head. And I was very unsettled. And that was the unresolved pain, the unresolved hurt, the unresolved trauma that simply must be dealt with. And so you shove it down, you go to false comforters, you make up for it with striving and performance and accolades, but it will never satisfy. It got to the point where it all came crashing down. The energy of my own performance, striving, self-will, like it only has so much energy. Mm-hmm. And I was past the point of exhaustion. I was a jerk at work. I was a jerk at home. I would blame everyone else, right? The pain had to project outward
right.
to others, right? For me to actually see my false self, to see my way, to see my effect on others would mean there's a single kink in the armor of perfection. And once there's a single kink, well, then the house of cards is all going to come down.
Wow. Wow.
And so I couldn't even go there. It was, you know, just false perfectionism, all an ego, and you know, people would give me feedback and I would just literally think, I don't care what you think, I'm over here crushing it, it doesn't matter, and I would just ignore it and keep going, right? And so it was just really hard to be around me. And then, you know, I ended up having panic attacks, I ended up going to the hospital, everything was fine. It was just stress. But the stress, I mean, yeah, it was a combination of working too hard, drinking too much, but it was also this pain was coming up for the first time in my life.
And Ryan, can you point to a moment? I'm hearing some really beautiful themes. Like you said, a jerk at home, a jerk at work, drinking too much. Is there a moment where you would say, I hit my bottom? Or a moment that's just poignant to you? A moment that's poignant where you go, this is when I knew it's not working. I want something different.
Yeah, at the time, I just needed time to think because everything was racing so fast and it was out of control and spiraling down. Now I think I realized I was like running and hiding out of fear, out of shame. I took some time off for a few days and I was just by myself. And that was the time where I read Wild at Heart. And it was my wife who handed me the book. That book had sat by my nightstand for 2 years.
Wow.
Unread, while all this was spiraling down.
It's very symbolic.
Looking back, I can also see all the warfare that was involved, right? I mean, you know, enemy just had a stronghold in all my pain from my childhood, all the messages of my life, and then was just laying it on thick to try to take me out. And so that's why, you know, my marriage was opposed, my fear of having kids because of what I went through, you know, through the divorce when I was 5 and not wanting to subject anyone to that pain, the agreement that like I can never be a good dad because I didn't really know what I was doing, right? And so, so God coming for me in that place through the book and telling me all the things that no one had ever told me. And having a category for the battle, and oh, there's a third category, and it's the enemy. On my knees, bawling and broken, and God came for me in a profound way. And that was the first encounter with God. So that was miracle number one. Miracle number two was, it was actually my fault and not other people's. Mm. But then it actually wasn't my fault because of what had happened to me.
So you're saying I took personal responsibility and quit blaming as a projection of pain. And at the same time, I took an honest inventory of my story and started asking questions rather than what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
It's where did this start? Where did this come from? Where might this be? What is this saying about who I have become from my story?
Right. And so it wasn't blaming the boss. It wasn't blaming my wife. It was, yeah, oh, wow, I had no idea. I never dealt with any of this. And yes, this explains the pain. And now I need, you know, personal counseling to deal with that, and got that. And that was profoundly helpful. And that's been, you know, three rounds over the last, you know, 12 years, right? And so that's been hugely helpful.
So you're 3 days off the grid, a pause just to take stock of what it feels like is your life is blowing up and you're coming to some big decisions. Am I going to walk out of my story, or am I going to look inside my own soul and see why I am the man that I am today in my story? And it sounds like you had a profound, miraculous moment where you gave your life to God. I mean, really for the first time, fully surrendered. And now we're sitting here 6.5 years later, which you wouldn't have known at the time, but we're celebrating a long obedience in the same direction, as Eugene Peterson would say. Like, you gave your life to God, but then became this masculine apprenticeship over time that literally, as we're recording, you just got off the mountain from helping one of our dear brothers, like, lead a retreat for young men who have knots in their rope like you were 6.5 years ago. So I'm curious, as you look at maybe like from 15,000 feet to ground level, how would you describe your discipleship from kind of then till now? What do you see you engaged with in partnership with God in your becoming?
Yeah, I think the profound rescue from God made it clear that was the solution, right? That was the answer. That's what I needed. And then I'm a pretty logical person. So I was like, well, I don't know anything about that. So I need to learn.
The humility of that moment, the Michael Jordan of fill in the blank,
yep,
finds himself at his first practice when he's never bounced a basket, he's never dribbled a basketball.
Yep.
Right. I remember that moment when I came to Christ with a similar achievement drive of, there's nobody in the world behind me. Yeah. I am in last place in this story,
yeah,
of my faith journey, which is just so telling, right? It's the, yeah, it's the boys screaming out, but it, you're at an enormous inflection point that requires courage to just take one small step forward.
Yeah. So if the breakthrough happened in 2010, because I found God in such a profound way, like, and I knew that I needed to go on my journey with God, and I had no idea what that would look like. Having enough of God at the time, we improved our marriage. We were ready to have kids. Like, I had all the fear, but I knew enough that if I have God, and I'm sensing I'm ready for kids now, because I'm going to deal with it.
And you weren't going to have kids.
Right.
Right. You had made a decision earlier.
I was just in such fear of what that would be like. And yeah, I felt so unqualified that I kept pushing it out.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I dated for 5 years and we've been married for 7. Wow. Until I was ready. God bless her. Now she has said, it's so good that we've waited, because look at how great of a father you are. And that's very meaningful to me, and I appreciate how it's not easy for a Texas girl to wait as long as she waited, but I think God was in that too. My son was born in 2011. My daughter was born in 2015. You know, we started going back to church. The wheels started turning, but my discipleship hadn't started. Mm. So there was like a 5-year period of like catching my breath, breathing, getting enough under me,
yeah,
that then I was ready.
Okay.
Right. So then, like, 7 years ago was the first boot camp. I left there with Beautiful Outlaw and developing conversational intimacy with God. And I did not have a category for hearing his voice 7 years ago. Wow. Right after that, I mean, I started absorbing all the content y'all put out in the books, in the podcasts. And when I heard about Become Good Soil, I just thought, oh, you know, retreat for men in their 30s, that's totally what I need. And then I prayed into it and I felt like, apply. I just had a sense to apply. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I didn't even know what I didn't even know. And I'm here to testify that y'all definitely apply into the applications, because I was definitely the wild card, right?
You were.
I didn't have like the 20 years right. of, you know, walking with God. And right. so, but God saw something in me. He guided y'all to see something in me. To be at Become Good Soil Intensive in 2016. So I knew I had done it all wrong for 37 years. Mm. And it was like God gave me enough rope to do it my way to the max, to get to the brink. And then it was like he grabbed me as I was like falling into the abyss, and he pulled me back and rescued me. And so when I received the worldview and the invitation to the decade at the intensive, it was like, this feels right, and I have nothing else, and I am going to trust and risk. And then every time I trusted and tried something, then I'm hearing God a little more. He's sending me on these, you know, different experiences and adventures, and I'm trying to like die to the false self, and it's just all these at-bats, right? Mm. The thousands of choices every day. And then quickly I just sort of adopted it as my worldview with which I'm going to filter everything through.
Yes.
And I think that going all in early really helped for my personal story. The driving force I knew couldn't be me. Like, because it was so you know, prideful, self-sufficiency, selfish, all about me, all my energy, I knew I had to die to that, right? I had to die to the Michael Jordan.
That's the temptation, is you just be a good man, which simply means it's a self-salvation process. I'm doing this thing for God rather than Christ in me. I am dying to the self-life. It's union, and it's out of that growing union that I can follow God wherever he wants me to go, whether that's in alignment with my gifting or not.
Yeah.
So it's really important to hear you say you actually had to allow your gifting to die for a time in the way that you made life work apart from God.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I would add that if my gifting and my identity were my number one idol and driving force, I knew it needed to become the number one thing I needed to die to. It didn't go well for several years, and then it went sometimes kind of well and sometimes really not good for another several years. And I also, at the intensive, I was convinced I had to quit my job. I was like, I can't do that and have God.
Yes.
And God said, nope, you need to stay at least 2 years, because he knew that's all I could, like, you know, handle.
Right.
Right? And then within, like, 6 months, I'm like, okay, so, you know, how much longer? And then God kept moving the goalposts. Like, then it was 5 years, and it was 10 years, and it was 3 years. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna just settle in. As I look back, in fear and hiding and running from pain, without God, I wouldn't have been able to have everything that I have now.
Yes.
And so God redeemed my vocation. God redeemed my marriage. He redeemed me as a husband. He redeemed me as a father. He gave me my incredible children. He recently moved us into a house that we wouldn't have done otherwise.
It was a God shape decision, right? That's what's important, is the move was purely because you guys were responding to God rather than your best scheming or your best strategizing or just doing the next logical thing.
Yeah. And so it hit me in the house that it was, I've been in my chimney sweep for 17 years and it'll probably be north of 2 decades. And I'm in a house that I wouldn't have picked, but God gave, and it's a blessing and we want to bless others with it. That's kind of where Walter Mitty comes in. When I saw that for the, I don't know, more than five or six times.
So you're talking about the movie, Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yeah.
And you saw it recently.
Yep.
And you found yourself reflecting on the metaphor that it's become of kingdom living as an apprenticeship.
Yep.
What did you see?
So when I saw the trailer, it just, God highlighted this for me, that the first half was resignation. Right?
Of Walter Mitty.
His clothes match the wall color of the like depressing white and gray hallways in the basement and like in his apartment. And he was just resigned and had a lot of passivity. What God revealed in my story was I also hit a point of resignation back, you know, over a dozen years ago, but it was not through passivity. It was through pride, plowing through at work, self-sufficiency. It was through striving, like aggressive action.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it still ended up in resignation because when I got the big promotion that I thought would change everything, nothing changed in me internally and very little changed externally.
Well, you're naming something really important for the heart of men is we think it's often failure that actually blows us up. And sometimes it is because failure is one of the greatest assets in masculine initiation. But success is equally informative and hopefully transformative because you succeeded. You won the game. You climbed the ladder. And it wasn't all that great, right? And so you really are now left at a crossroads of what will you do with the success when it's not what they all said it would be for you on the inside.
Yeah, and so in the Walter Mitty trailer, there's a inflection point moment where he finds a moving box, and in it is a backpack that his dad had given him to go travel and find himself, but then his dad dies, tragedy inserts into his story, and his life got derailed.
Yeah, and really, really small.
Right, but 20 years later, out of the box, that is an invitation at the same time as slide 25 is missing. Mm. And Sean Penn, is waving him to come find him, right? And so at that moment, there is an invitation for Walter Mitty to risk. And he had to say yes. And he had to follow God, not knowing the outcome or where it would go. And that's when like his story of redemption happens, right? And so for me, it was at the 2016 intensive with the invitation. And I left there with saying yes to a decade and having no idea what was going to happen. And in the first few years, it was like very foggy with, you know, my brokenness, fighting off the warfare, breaking agreements, excavating, dying to the false self, stretching my frontier, doing the things I wish I'd done before but never did, right? And now looking back, God has invited me into more than 100 experiences. And they didn't all go great, but they all had a piece. Mm-hmm. And I had to experience a portion of life that I didn't before. I had to experience a lesson that God wanted to teach me. And ultimately, I had to experience God coming through.
Wow.
And so as I look here today, even though it's just been 6.5 years of walking in this message, like God is reliable. God has been in my story since the beginning, even though it didn't feel like it during the hard times as a child. He's been in all of it. Back to Walter Mitty, like he's got to jump out of the helicopter and he's got to choose to say yes. And he barely makes it, right? There's all these encounters where like...
It's a beautiful metaphor because it's so messy.
Right. But the point is like, but he does make it. Mm. And it feels like the rug's about to be pulled out. It feels like he's about to fall off the cliff. It feels like you're going to die. And I can relate to that. But as I look back, like that hasn't happened. It's actually been wonderful, lavish, abundant gifts from God amidst the duality of the pain and the promise, the hope and the doubt, the redemption and the death to the false self that we have to do, right? Like, it's all both and. It's been wild and it's been amazing. And, you know, for God to give my wife the patience that he gave her, God bless her, for her faith to carry us through the hard time for many years. And then now for me to have my faith catch up, and there's moments where I'm able to help carry her and we bless each other. And then to have my son, you know, in age-appropriate ways, living out the message, and then getting to be with like-hearted kings, helping rescue others in the same way I was rescued. There's just nothing like it. And I'm just thankful and I'm hopeful and expectant that God is going to keep coming through. But it doesn't mean it's going to look like I thought. And it doesn't mean it's going to be all, you know, great outcomes and rainbows and unicorns, but he's in all of it. Mm.
So I'd like to get super practical for a minute, because I'm guessing there's a lot of men listening going, yeah, I want that. I want that. And WTF, the job's killing me. I don't even know if I'm supposed to stay or not, but if I had a chance to get out, I would. And my wife doesn't even like me. Like, I got so much sideways. I don't even know what I don't know. I don't know where to start. When I've had the privilege of doing life pretty intimately with you over part of that 6.5 years, which is just so awesome. And so I have eyes on your life. So in my mind, I'm getting super practical of seeing these categories that you took a risk. You rolled the dice, you invested, you tried some stuff on. Like you said, God initiated something and you responded, and some worked and some didn't. But there are these clear categories that I think of your initiation that really have brought a lot of the fruit. While you still being at your post, Sherry and I have this mantra that we often refer to as trees don't get to move. God uses trees as a parable for who we are in his kingdom. But one quality of trees is, other than in Western civilization, when you see massive trees moving in landscape projects and being artificially propped up for years, they're not intended to move. In other words, God puts us in a place and invites us to bloom, to grow, to mature, to heal there. So, like, Ryan, when you think back, what are a few examples of categories? Like, and I'll just throw one out there, is the brotherhood that you formed. I mean, in your 6.5 years, you have formed treaties with like-hearted men that you are doing daily life with. You don't just go from mountaintop to mountaintop. You have men in whom you trust, and they trust you, and you deal with the hard things, and you pray for each other, and they have eyes on your life. And I venture to guess that's very different than the quality of relationships that you had 10 years ago with men.
Right.
So what are some categories that you go, these have really helped?
What comes to my heart first is there's the kindness of the decade, because it takes a long time.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yes.
And especially for hard-charging, world-changing men, we need the kindness of the decade. So it's not pressure.
Yeah.
So I was blessed to have a lot of stability in my marriage and in my vocation that I could make a little bit of margin to start on this journey. So if there's someone out there who, you know, is just in the thick of it and things are completely sideways, if it were me, I would check back in with God. Are you in the job you're supposed to be in? Yes. Are you in the relationship you're supposed to be in? Yes. Is there anything else that needs to change, God? And if the answer is no, then just trust you're in alignment and trust that it's going to pass, because for the longest time with my career, like I realized God wanted me there. So why didn't I fully embrace it more?
Yes.
And also I was really good at it and I enjoyed at it, and it's a wonderful place to work, but just this pain in me, maybe I just felt guilty for working so hard for so long and making that my identity. I just felt really guilty I was still there. So I had to come into congruence on that. Once things are stabilized, then I think there's more margin and opportunity to really explore some of these categories. Mm-hmm. But if things are just completely chaotic, then you just have to give yourself grace.
Yeah.
And also know that a lot of data is going to come through that chaos.
Yes.
So if nothing else, you're just journaling through what all's happening, what's triggering you. And you're getting that data at a super fast pace.
Yeah, learning to be a student of your own soul.
Yeah,
right. Like you said, you had to attune to your own life, where you used to block people and feedback, and actually God coming for you, you would block it because you had a plan and you had a success path. But I hear you saying you really started tuning in to see your life more clearly on the level of your masculine soul and your lack of initiation.
Yep. Giving God my full yes. The second thing would probably be sonship. And I had no idea what sonship was. I mean, it had a profound impact on me. The first time I heard you teach on it, as well as the second and the third. And I started praying, God, you're my father. I am your son. Will you father me today? And just risking and trusting. It was really helpful for me, again, without much of a church background, when I read Neil Anderson's Who I Am in Christ. The I am statements in there, mm-hmm. and how I was able to personalize them helped reinforce the specificity of who I am as a son.
Yes.
And that was super helpful. And then other books in this message. So I would just encourage everyone to really try to get that foundation of the beloved son.
Yeah.
Because everything else builds on top of that. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I think it's just pushing into wherever God's leading, because we can't arrange it ourselves.
Right.
Like if you take becoming a king, and whether you go sequentially or you go hardest, the easiest, or like if you map out your own game plan,
right,
God might be in that, but he may not. And if he's not in it, it will for sure go sideways and you'll just waste your energy and fight bravely and die quickly. Yeah. Looking back, it was God orchestrating the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And I only found that through prayer and through being present. I operated in sixth gear for most of my life. And so the hardest one was to go to from sixth to fifth, because that felt like the most death.
Wow.
And it also feels like that's the biggest like deceleration, because you're going so fast and you're so fried. And that took, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And then to go from fifth to fourth took probably as long. And then God invited me in 2020 into third gear. And that felt like death. That felt impossible. It was you're teaching on margin and McHugh's Fire Your Boss in April of 2020 when God invited me into third gear. And I had no idea, like, oh, pandemic's not over tomorrow. Like, it's going to keep going. Like, he made a way in my life to create additional margin where now I operate in third gear and I am just as impactful and successful at work and I have more time with family. But again, it was all God arranged. Like, I didn't arrange for any of this.
Beautiful.
I just kept saying yes.
One other theme I see that's very pronounced, I have seen you make very calculated, intentional shifts to start fighting for the hearts of others. You know, you had shared that in your story of coming out of the childhood trauma with incredible gifting to succeed, you can kind of craft a pretty selfish life, a self-centered life. And everything from helping out with allies at their retreats and leading local circles of a campfire, you know, here and there once a month in your community, where you just set the table. You make a fire, have some drinks, and put a question or two out there for guys to talk about, to engage the life of their soul in many other ways, even locally with your kids and their activities and your church. Like, you started offering. I think it's really important for people to see that there comes a shift where we realize our life is for others. And as we offer out of what we've lived, even more healing and more transformation comes for our own soul, because we can access nuanced places that are unfinished in us that only get exposed through our offering to others. Have you noticed that theme?
Yeah, that's a big part of my story. I grew up very introverted and quirky and didn't really fit in. And exclusion, you know, was a big part of, you know, middle school and high school. And then when I plowed into my career, well, you know, it was not that bad for me to lose friendships at the time, because it allowed me to spend more time at work and all of that. So I had to pray for like-hearted friends for 5 years. Wow. It started with one that God arranged. And then it was two. And then through other guys walking in this message, it's now, you know, it's now a handful, and we're starting to get pretty tight. God is in it. And again, that's not something I arranged for. And I guess now having—
It is something you prayed for.
Yeah.
And you did the work to become that kind of person.
Yep.
So there was something in your power to do that took time, and you did it.
As for my heart for helping out others, it's simply because I've received so much. I've been given the gift of grace and mercy and redemption and salvation that I couldn't have earned. And then I've been given a lot of healing through this message, and I'm compelled to help others in whatever portion that is. Like, you know, we want to charge the hill. We want to have a giant impact, and, you know, maybe one day, you know, but easy, Tiger. And it's been messy at a few events that I've been at. And like this weekend, a spirit of loneliness from one of the men's stories was on me for like 12 hours. And it made me see the room differently. It made me feel like an outsider and lonely. And I prayed against, you know, types of warfare that were on my heart, you know, the night before and in the morning, and it was still there. And I had to specifically have God name that and then specifically mention it. And then it, you know, it went away. So it's just, you know, we carry our stuff with us where we go on mission. It's just good to be aware of that. And just know God's going to use your pain, and he's going to help the people that need to hear what you have to say. And God gives you the words, and he shows up every time. Like, to risk in prayer that God's going to show up and give you the words, like a couple of years ago, it felt so risky. And now, like, I have not seen God fail once. And I've heard some pretty wild things. And like, being a younger guy in the message, I mean, even though I'm in my, you know, early to mid 40s, but just feeling young in the message, like, I've just gone for it anyway. And it's amazing how it's spot on.
And as we've talked about, it's all practice.
Yeah.
Right? It's all a sandbox for our initiation. Like, this isn't about get it right. The brilliance of that is, it's, you're responding to God, right? He uses everything, and he will meet us when we truly consent to our initiation right here, right now, in this place, on this day. And so that's what you're doing, Ryan. It's an honor to sit with you, and it's been a gift to me. I've been so strengthened to watch you say yes and just dive in headfirst in responding to God's initiation and then seeing the fruit. I experience many men who are blessed by you and your yes to God. And I've seen it in your children, and I've seen it in your wife. It's working. So thanks for risking sharing your story with me and all these like-hearted men around the world.
Thank you.
Friends, thank you for joining us for another episode. Thank you for saying yes to your masculine initiation. Thank you for consenting to Jesus's narrow path of life. And thank you for journeying together with us. And now let's go to be with God. 90 seconds of pause to enjoy your heart being loved by God, to notice what surfaces and what God wants to bring to your attention. And perhaps it's simply to breathe and be with the Trinity here in this place. Let's pause for 90 seconds. And we'll see you again for another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. It's our honor to walk with you as you walk with God. And we look forward to being back together with you for another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast.